Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, hello, Big Tyson Jacks. How's the mouth? Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures. We got everything up today. We ran up on the close pretty heavily last night. Now we're running up this morning. S&P futures up 11. Dow futures up 97. NASDAQ futures up 44. A lot of this, I think, has to do with Biden coming out and saying he will compromise on the corporate tax rate. And I'm just... Kevin, how are you? I'm about to go off ranting.
Morning. I'm doing fine.
About to go off ranting here, and I don't, whatever. People can believe whatever the hell they damn please, I guess they're going to anyway. But the idea that people have been indoctrinated into how bad it is for them if corporate rates go up. Are we really, as an individual, are you really that stupid? I mean, you could make a case where if you made corporate rates, 80% to where nobody wanted to open up a business, that it would help, it would hurt everybody to such a huge extent. Yeah, I get it. I could write that paper for you and help you out. But the idea that, 25% is we might be able to touch him for that, but if it was like 26, it's way too tough, and Jeff Bezos will be mad at us. I mean, no, they don't care what our rates are, do they, Kevin? Nobody cares?
It doesn't matter anyway. This whole argument about corporate rates is just stupid, because the same people are going to take the same deductions that get their taxable income down to zero, and they're not going to pay anything. So if you're gonna complain that Amazon pays nothing, it's real simple. You just say everybody has a minimum tax. I'm not talking about alternative minimum tax or anything. You just say whatever else you have a minimum tax of 10% or something like that. And remember, it's the accounting for tax is totally different from GAAP. So, I don't want to say totally, but treatment of capital expenditures and so on is different. So as a result, you have you have people who can report positive earnings to the investment community, and at the same time turn around and report no earnings to the IRS.
Well, don't. When everybody thinks of corporations, and I'd love to do that. I'd love Stocks and Jacks to be like Google or someplace, but we're not. But Stocks and Jacks is a C corp, and I'm thinking an awful lot of the people on the listeners maybe don't have C corps, but maybe do. Maybe do if it's older, it probably is a C corp, because I'm going to say that if
but our entrepreneur listeners have S corps.
Okay, in the last certain amount of years, but if you want to take somebody over, you probably got to be a C corp. I mean, if you're a human resources firm and you want to buy another one, I think that way back in the day, Bob Cerrone's firm had to change to a C corp so they could take over another C corp. I mean, it's not like it's. My point is, you can't assume that every C corp is Google or Amazon. It's a lot of it is people we know, and if Matty Weber brought in a million-dollar sponsor on the 15th of December, guess what? We're writing a $350,000 check, right? I mean, it's not like everybody.
Well, that's the other aspect of it is the same people who are taking the deductions that take their net income to zero are always going to do it, and the people who can afford the accounting and tax talent that they need to do that are the big guys. So we like to talk about going after the big guys and leaving the little guys alone. But the fact is, it's always disproportionately going to affect the little guys.
Well, plus if you really have no place to go with that. If all of a sudden you're surprised by it, you can't. We're not going to. I mean, Stacks and Jacks is not going to buy a plane and use double declining depreciation or some of the year's digits or something like that to not dodge taxes, but to move the taxes in front, move them up.
Yeah, but that's not how it works on the taxes anyway. They have a very specific tax code depreciation schedule, and that's where they really have the opportunity to mess around. That's bigger than anything they do with the rates.
You
might be able to. Let's say you make a major capital expenditure in equipment. It's accelerated. Whether you're doing double declining balance, straight line, however you want to do it for your accounting statements, is not the same as what's going into the tax statement.
Well, I mean, I'm not a tax guy, but I try not to be a big dummy that much either. I mean, I end up doing that once in a while, but. If all of a sudden Maddie walked in with his check of $1 million on the 15th of December, somewhere between the 16th and the 31st, Maddie and I are going to be at the store buying a new board, which we could use, buying this, buying that. Oh, by the way, we'd probably pay ourselves some hefty bonuses, too, so we could deduct that, but now we'd have to pay on that. I mean, we would do what we could, but none of it...
if you like the personal tax rate better than the corporate tax rate, then you'll be happy to pay yourself big bonuses.
Well, yeah. I mean, my point is... Any kind of one year they had how this got into the tax, I have no idea. One year you had a big deduction for you could take off like half the price of a four wheel drive vehicle. How the hell that got into anything? I mean, I suspect Manny and I'd be sporting new pickup trucks, in a week or something. But, what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah,
there's things you can do.
Back when they did the stimulus, the tax plan. In the younger George Bush's years,
that's
exactly what happened. Is they accelerated the depreciation schedule for vehicles, trucks.
Yeah,
it had to be a truck. So and SUVs counted. So every business owner I know had a new SUV.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it's not like we'd be dummies about it, but we would end up.
Wouldn't use that depreciation schedule, that 50% in the first year. For your financial reporting, you would use that for your tax calculation. That's all I'm saying is, that's a more significant line item in the tax code than anything else.
I can only imagine,
and that has nothing to do with the corporate rate. So they can talk all they want about whether it's going to be 25, 29, 22. It doesn't matter. It's really, the devil is in all of the other details, not the corporate rate itself.
Well, you certainly can't buy one for this amount, but say, for instance, Maddie, you know the creatures we have calling in, on the show, and they're, they're terrific, they have knowledge, but they also are, the guys who call us up. So what do you suppose, if I were to go out and buy, like, a corporate jet, who'd be the first one to call and how long would it take? Hey, I hear you got a corporate jet. I need to go to Des Moines. How long before we get that call?
I was going to say Thomas, but...
Thomas would know in a second. He'd be like, hey, remember what I used to produce for you guys 10 years ago? You owe me. You owe me a trip to Vegas on your corporate...
I don't think anyone's turning down a private jet trip.
Oh, no.
That sounds pretty good.
Do we at least got to make them bring their own little...
Sure, but when it's personal use or it's not company use, then it's going to be taxable income to somebody.
Who cares at that point? What's the difference?
Well, I understand, but again, you get the corporate jet, then that creates you some all new and fun tax issues that you have to deal with.
So, just out of curiosity, what say we had one of these things? Now, I know you can go get the little bottles of booze, and we can get a cooler because I'm sure the plane has its own fridges and stuff. But what do you get for chow? I mean, do you get like a sack of White Castles, or do you go to Popeyes? I mean, what do you stock the plane with for chow from here to Vegas? Clearly it can't just be the stuff.
I can think of two times I've flown on the corporate aircraft, and one of them was a short trip, and there was no food, so that was fine. The other one was they served a hot meal that was good, And I don't know if it was prepared before we got on or if they had a little kitchenette. I wasn't paying any attention because I was with other people and having conversations. All I know is they marched out with this nice plate of a warm meal, and it was really good.
Well, I had a would-be client. I don't think he ever signed up, but he flew to one of our seminars, and he had this really nice it was the Gulfstream, right? This is early 90s, back when the Lear was just becoming kind of out for the big things. I mean, you and I, we'd have been fine with it, but not... How can I be not sexist here? The ladies were not big on the Lear.
You can't help yourself.
No, but ladies were not big on the Lear. Can you guess why, either one of you mavens?
I don't know.
Bathroom wasn't private enough.
Bathroom wasn't private at all.
Oh, there you go.
The Gulfstream, I took a tour of this. Boy, was it nice. But, you know, it was so weird, Kevin. It was like, and Maddie, that it was like your house. The pilots land the thing here. I don't know where the guy came from, Texas or someplace. Go figure. And, they had a huge list of crap they needed to fix for the plane. You know, stuff like, you know, latch on the washroom's loose. It's like taking your car from here to California and say, well, need new brakes, need an oil change. I mean, they had a list of like 30 things. I mean, none of them were like engine fell off or anything like that. But, you know, the thing still ran. But they had stuff that they had to do. And they had some stuff while they were at Midway. They fixed, you know, one cabinet latch was off. So they had to put guys got the screwdriver. But they had the full bathroom. And the guy's wife says, not getting me in anything without a full bathroom. Evidently, the original Lears, in the front row, right behind the pilot, one of the seats essentially came off, or that was your toilet. So somebody essentially using the can right behind the pilots in the front row, and I'm thinking, I'm not even a chick. I want no part of that. My God. So Gulfstream, when it came back...
It'd have to go really, really bad.
Yeah. It would have to. Anyway, it's not often that I get our buddy Lou, but yesterday we started talking real quick about the firing squad thing. And he, of course, how many people were in a firing squad? So I made some smart ass comment about.
Oh no, never had to face one.
I know they give one blank. I know, I've heard that they give one blank so everybody can have a conscience and say I'm not the one who shot him. Isn't that the truth? I believe that is the truth.
Apparently, there are
five
in a firing squad. Yes.
This is why don't you just use the airline gun like the guy in North Korea? Then you don't even need guys. You just turn the thing on. Let it just blast the guy away. Anyway, so I made some comment to Lou about how I always thought that the places that were the most comfortable frying people were the places you didn't want to get caught because your rights probably got trampled on the most. And he goes, like, where? And I said, well, like Texas, for instance. And I just had a feeling. I read somewhere once way back in the day, something in the back of your mind. So Lou, of course, is arguing with me that I was way too nasty to the Texicans of the world, and anyway, so of course I dig this up here. How many I'm wrong, Eddie. The bottom line: how many executions do you think there have been since 1976, Kevin, in the whole country?
I don't know how many have there been in Texas, and then they can tell you how many there have been.
Well, no, actually, you couldn't. There's been 1532
because there's Texas, and then there's all the sissy states.
Yes, exactly. The United States as a whole, 1,532. Texas, 571. So they're like 40% of all of them.
Yeah, but that's a different argument than whether your rights got trampled. That just means that they're more inclined to sentence to death and then to carry it out. So that's half of the argument. But if you said you don't want to get caught there because your rights got trampled. I don't know. That's a different discussion, and I don't know the answer to that. I'm not taking a position on it. I'm just saying it's a different.
Well, okay. Now on a list of them, I'm not saying I'm just saying that if I was going to be falsely accused of murder, here I would not want to be in Texas. I wouldn't want to be in Oklahoma. I wouldn't want to be in Florida. I wouldn't want to be in Missouri. I wouldn't want to be in Georgia and Alabama, and they're right like the top eight. Just saying. You know, Ohio's like
well, that, yeah. You don't want to be falsely accused. You may still, and I don't, again, I don't know the answer, so I'm not telling you you're wrong, but I'm telling you that unless you produce the data, you may be falsely stereotyping there.
Maybe. I'm just saying, if I'd
Do you know, so the reason you're talking about this is because South Carolina voted to institute a firing squad.
That's what started this whole thing, yeah.
Do you know that there are three other states in the U.S. that that also have a firing squad?
I think Utah is one of them.
Utah is one of them. The other two are Mississippi and Oklahoma. And apparently, three inmates, all in Utah, have been killed by firing squads since the U.S. reinstated the death penalty in 1977.
How do you sign up for a firing squad, and what manner of creature do you have to be to want to be on one of those?
Good question. Also, in South Carolina, they're going to give their prisoner the choice, lethal injection or firing squad. I don't think I'm choosing firing squad.
Well, but here's the deal. No, you got that wrong, Mr. The choice was electric chair or lethal injection. The companies that used to make the stuff for the lethal injection stopped selling it for human consumption. I don't know if that's the right word. Obviously, they still make it because you can put a horse down, you can put a dog down. They won't. So if somebody were to say in South Carolina, I'll go by lethal injection, you essentially couldn't kill them. So this is now the second choice.
Well, that's kind of true.
It's a way to buy time, what you're saying.
What they're saying here in this USA Today article I'm reading, the bill approved Wednesday by a 66-43 vote will require condemned inmates to choose either being shot or electrocuted if lethal injection drugs aren't available. Because there's somewhat of a shortage
right.
of the lethal injection
well,
drugs.
Yeah, the place won't give it to you for killing
See,
a person.
Another supply chain disrupted.
Yeah. Yet another supply let's just say, because I know somebody who put their horse down within the last 6 months, the stuff's available.
Yeah. There's only 9 states that still allow the electric chair. Of course, South Carolina would be one of those, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that everyone interprets, the Constitution in their own ways regarding all kinds of, lines, but the cruel and unusual punishment, to me, getting strapped to an electric chair is kind of cruel and unusual. I don't know, like, maybe I'm weird.
Well, hanging was not so hot.
Yeah, hanging seems kind of cruel and unusual, too.
And there's other places in the world that they absolutely cannot believe that we still do this. But I got a good one for you.
I'm in the anti-death penalty as well, although there are times when it's really hard to be that way.
You're right about that.
I am so...
I don't even know that I am anti-death penalty, to be honest. I don't really have a strong opinion about it either way, but I'm just saying, like, it seems a little cruel and unusual to stand in front of a firing squad. I don't know.
I just think the chances of... there's enough chance of getting the wrong person sentenced to death, and there are enough instances of people getting railroaded, not that the cops don't think, in many cases, just because, but in a lot of cases, the cops just jump to a conclusion, build the case, and next thing you know. So, and I have a friend who was on the, it was a public defender, in Chicago, before he retired, and he was on that murder task force that he had to defend people. I have met all of the defense attorneys involved in that. They are full of, they know in many cases when they're representing a client, it is just to keep the needle out of the arm. Get them a life sentence because the guy's guilty
as can be.
But they also can tell you lots of stories about people getting railroaded who were not really guilty. And I think there's just too much of that for me to be comfortable that the death penalty is a good idea.
What was his name?
I would agree.
Who's our governor's name, Ryan?
George Ryan?
Well, the guy who went to jail that almost won the Peace Prize. That would have been interesting if he'd have won the Peace Prize and went to jail because he abolished the death penalty. He did that. Didn't we have... Boy, Matty, look this up because I don't want to be wrong on this. Didn't we have 3 people from death row in 1 year exonerated? They were like, had their turn set up to be fried? And he said, look, I can't be doing that. If we're that bad, we can't have it here. It was not... I don't think it had anything to do with him being anti-death penalty. It was just we were so sloppy at it. I'm really weird on this one, Kevin.
I did a Google, and I don't... You might be right about the 3, but there's one in particular that popped right up. And
yeah.
There's a big article in the Tribune from March 10th, 2011, and it says, if there was one moment when Illinois' death penalty began to die, it was on February 5th, 1999, when a man named Anthony Porter walked out of jail a free man, basically right before he was going to get put to death. And sitting in the governor's mansion, George Ryan watched Porter's release on television and wondered how a man could come within 50 hours of being executed only to be set free by the efforts of a journalism professor, his students, and a private investigator who apparently uncovered the case.
Yeah, pretty scary.
Good Lord.
I mean, I think there was...
It says here, Ryan turned to his wife. It says, and so I turned to my wife and I said, how the hell does that happen? How does an innocent man sit on death row for 15 years and gets no relief? And so that was it.
Oh, I don't blame him. I mean, I'm in the middle on this. On the non-rape murder, whatever you want to call them, and the regular, is there such a thing as a regular property crime? I really think that you need to change the, this is when we're talking about banks and corporations and in general no good nick people. You really need to have the fine be whatever you took divided by the chance of being caught. Just to make it a zero-sum game. If you think people are rational. And I think, I honestly believe that people that are on the boards of banks that don't mind people getting these huge fines for being stuff, they're very money rational. Let me get this straight. We're going to steal $1 billion. If we get caught, the fine's $100 million and we got 1 in 100 chance of getting caught, I say go ahead. I think there's a lot of that going on. I honestly do. I've felt that way for since I had that in a class at the University of Chicago. Now, on the other stuff, if you could prove to me that if somebody, you know, blasted somebody in traffic and loved it and shot somebody 10 times, that somehow or another, that if the guy's dangling from the L-tracks tomorrow morning, that 25 other people see it and it's so heinous that there's no way on earth they would ever consider that essentially you saved five other people by doing it, I'd be all for it. I just don't know how you make that analysis.
Yeah, I don't know how you make the decision. I don't know how you get it right. And, you know, from my perspective, I just have to be consistent.
Yeah.
On the application of what I believe. So, like I said, there's times when it's really hard. You see people who are pure evil and you just want to see them executed.
But do you really want them executed?
I have to stick to principle at some point. No, not every point though. I can will. No,
but question though, Kevin is
yeah,
is
it's
when?
Funny time. You use the rational response to the potential punishment. We just had discussed this. We were discussing transportation regulation, and I was up early yesterday morning, and I thought, you know what, I need to frame this a little bit better. You know, we had some cases to discuss in class, and and some opinions to get, and I said, I need to frame this. So I just kind of did a quick audible and pulled together some looks at how some sort of on the edges looks at regulation and what the responsibility would be. So your old buddy Milton Friedman, I had some video from him and his point of view on it and his belief that the free market would correct and that it's in people's interest to... it's in people's interest to behave accordingly because you don't want your reputation killed, you don't want to go to jail, you don't want to, you know, and he was all in favor of enforcing the laws and jail sentences. But by the same token, I also contrasted it and used some Elizabeth Warren, who is obviously on the other end of the spectrum, where she's looking and saying, the carnage is just too severe. We have to regulate because the hurt is too severe. And so then we veered from there into the Enron class and said, was the carnage too severe? Was it? Yeah. But the other interesting part of the Enron was that if it were in their self-interest to stay out of jail, it didn't work. and then we got, we scaled it back and got into regulation of the of freight, freight in the United States. And there you see a little bit of each kind of philosophy creeping in and finding its way into how the regulation works. And it made for some really interesting discussion. But, this idea that it necessarily is going to be a deterrent, I'm not sure it is, because I think you get a lot of people who think they're just not going to get caught.
I'm going to say that I would love to have Elizabeth Warren on for, the whole show, to be honest with you. Because I think in a lot of ways, she sees things and she sees things that I can't see, obviously, because she's closer to the action. She sees things that are absolutely wrong. But I don't think her training is such that, I mean, how can I put this? Because I don't despise the lady. I honestly do not. I think that her, I think she's got the right heart. I honestly believe that. But I think her training is such that she sort of just doesn't get it. She will rail on some company, and then she will rail on the people that are supposed to be regulating them even more, saying you're not doing a good job. But she's so convinced that that's the way to go that she'll pour more money into the regulator that's clearly been doing a horse bleep job for like 80 years. And to me, that's just a total disconnect, Kevin. I don't think...
Well, it is. I think you're right, Tom. Often enough, the government response to its own failures is, well, we just need to fund it and do it more.
Yeah. And I think she totally misses the point, in my mind. I mean, the most regulated place I ever was in a pit on the CBOE with no regulators around, because it was a competitive environment and people regulated themselves, because if somebody cheated, they cheated you, right? Or they cheated a client,
right?
And you wanted business.
So that would, you know, your meter over there is on the Friedman side of the spectrum.
Yeah. And the idea that you would, that somehow or another you need somebody watching these people. No, you didn't. They watched themselves. But here's where, and I think there's a point where I would bring up to her, and she'd probably argue with me because she likes to argue, so I can play that way too. When you get to a certain point, like for PTI, for instance, where everybody knows we're a brokerage firm, money management firm, well, Wall Street Advisors is a money management firm. We have a nice little thing going, and always have. Clients like it, we like it. But the regulatory people look at us and they salivate. I mean, if they want to mess with somebody in December because nobody wants to go out of town on the holidays, they plop in here for 2 weeks, and always have. You know, it's just if you went through the whole routine, you know, the people listening to my show for 2 weeks, seeing I don't say something out of line. I mean, everybody knows I don't ever give investment advice on TV. I never would, or TV or radio. It's just way over the top. But on the other hand, it's if you use the regulator properly, if you're big enough, this is the part that Elizabeth, I think, really doesn't get. The regulator becomes the buffer between you and the justice system. Some of the stuff that the banks and the brokerage firms have done in my lifetime, that I've seen them do, for God's sake. The bigger you are, the more you can get away with. And it reaches the point. I mean, I've seen, and when I was on the floor, and I've been there 20 years, okay, but I never saw an independent market maker sit there and go, all right, wait a minute, these guys are coming in to buy 100 of this spread. We know we're a quarter or a half. But I just got the high sign from the booth that they're buying. Let's all be 3/8, 5/8 and steal 12.50 from these people 100 times. I never saw that happen, ever, Kevin, ever, ever. Yet I saw firms continually walk in and say, we want to cross this at 5/8. You guys want to participate, we'll give you half. In other words, we'll cut you in on the booty. Or we're taking it to the Philly or the Pecos and they'll let us cross it. And I never saw one of those guys get spanked because of that. And you know what, Kevin? That's a friggin' felony. If you brought that into the county court, somebody's going to jail. It's well over $100. And we'll talk about it after the break. But that's why Arthur Anderson is out of business today, because the accounting group was so stupid they didn't realize that the regulator is your friend, not your enemy. At that size, S&P futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 37. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Brett Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. S&P futures up 9. NASDAQ futures up 35. Dow futures up 82. So we rallied heavy yesterday afternoon. A lot of it had to do with the president's willing to compromise in his capital gains, but I'm not positive. You never really know what's causing that. All you know is, Maddie, more buyers than sellers.
That's right.
That's all you know.
That's it.
Or let's put it this way, more aggressive buyers, because there's always as many buyers as sellers, right?
There has to be, I think.
Yep. But they're a little more aggressive, let's say. They're willing to pay up. Over in Asia, the Nikkei up 26. Call that flat. Shanghai down 22.6%. Hang Seng down 26. Call that flat. The only one really making any kind of move over there is the Shanghai. We're in Europe. We got the DAX up 200, 1.3%. They were down. By the way, today is the jobs report. We'll have Carl on later. We're looking for like a million jobs. I mean, that's a big number. FTSE up 43.6%. CAC around up 12.2%. Just as a way of review, Dow was up 318 yesterday. That's almost a full 1%. S&P was up 34. NASDAQ still dragging, only up 50.4%. Bonds, 1.56 unchanged. The Bund minus 0.21 unchanged. Japan unchanged, positive point. They're actually down a basis point, 0.08. UK, 0.79. They were over 80 for most of the week. Oil, up 6 cents, 64.77. Brent up 10 cents, 68.19. Natural gas up a penny, 2.94. RBOB unchanged at 2.11. Gold, boy, my guys with gold and silver, we're having a big week. Finally, I guess I could say. Gold at 18.20, up 4.50. I don't know why, but all of a sudden, 3 days in a row, it's gold, you can't stop it. Silver down 4 cents, 27.43, but they were up a bunch yesterday. Copper up 11 cents, 4.72. Is copper going to make $5? That would be something. Palladium down 17 bucks, 29.30. And our favorite crypto, Bitcoin up 7.54 to 56,000. 707. Maddie, give traffic, weather, sports, and everybody's got to move away from their breakfast, and I'll give an India story.
Coming up on 38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a great start on a Friday morning. Very light traffic. No accidents to report on any of the area expressways right now. So if you're coming in from the north, west, or south, you're looking good. Off the expressways, there's a crash out west Grand Avenue between Elm Street and Spruce Street. Currently a multi-vehicle crash with injuries that has Grand Avenue closed out in the western suburbs. And then in the northern suburbs, St. Mary's Road at Route 60, there is a crash as well. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, similar to yesterday, a bit warmer, but still well below normal. Partly cloudy skies with a high of just 55. That's about 10 or 11 degrees below normal for this time of year. But warmer than yesterday. Right now it is partly cloudy and 45, going up to a mostly sunny 55 degrees. For our Phoenix listeners, no 55 down there. Sunshine with a high of 97 today. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, the Bulls welcome Zach LaVine back from COVID protocol. He missed the last 11 games, and they went ahead and blew out Charlotte on the road. 120-99 was the final in that one. Blackhawks are playing out their season as well, and they topped the Hurricanes in overtime 2-1 last night. Quiet night in baseball. The White Sox were off. They're back in action tonight down in Kansas City. That's a 7:10 Chicago time first pitch. Cubs were off as well. After sweeping the Dodgers, they'll welcome the Pirates into town for a weekend series. First pitch this afternoon at Wrigley is 1:20. Diamondbacks did play last night, and they lost to the Marlins 3-1.
Chief. Did you you listen to some of the Bulls game? I love Stacy, and boy, was he all over that ball kid last night?
I actually had the game on, but I didn't have the sound on, so I missed it in the commentary.
Well, the kid is, he's a very talented player. This is the younger brother, right?
Yeah, this is LaMelo Ball, looks like he might be the real deal. He's a really fun to watch, pass first guy that looks like he's going to be a pretty good player.
Yeah, and the brother's what, over in Europe someplace?
When you're the younger brother, you have to feed the older brothers. That makes you a pass-first guy.
That's right. Well, there's three of them. So the older...
Just like it made my youngest brother a goalie.
There's three of them. So Lonzo Ball's the oldest, and he's having a very solid career, and he plays for New Orleans. And there's a lot of speculation that the Bulls are going to go after him in the offseason.
Who was the guy who was
the
total...
The middle one is the kid that didn't make it, and he's playing somewhere in China or Europe or something.
Well, who's the one that the kid was with the old man was all over the place and being a total bleep?
That was the first one.
All right.
Yeah. And then...
Yeah, the father's been a little toned down lately.
Yeah, I think the oldest kid kind of told the dad to back off a little bit. That's my guess.
Well, the kid has all the talent, and he doesn't seem like a bad guy
at all.
But
the youngest one seems like the best out of all of them.
Well, he was... Let's put it this way. How can you say this? He's young, and he hasn't quite filled out yet.
Right. He's like 19. Yeah. Or he might even be 18.
And he... Last night was just a bad night because he ended up in a lot of... Not dirty plays, just kind of banging against... who's the guy's...
Well, I saw Vucevic caught him in the face with an elbow. It was Tice.
Yeah. I mean,
Daniel Tice.
He must have banged into Tice about four times, and that did not go well.
Daniel Tice offensive fouled him like three times. Of course, the official doesn't call it, and then Tice gets the ball and dunks on him. And the guy's like, hey, he just elbowed me in the face.
Well, he tripped
him. Yeah, he ran over me, and now you get let him dunk on me, too.
Right. Well, who's the guy the Bulls just drafted this year?
Patrick Williams.
Well,
he's the rookie.
Ball's running with him, and Ball fouled him. He kind of tripped him, but Ball went down first. The other guy like landed on him. God! But one of the Doug Stacy goes, "Hey, this is the men's department. The boys' department's downstairs. Get back down." This isn't the boys' department. Yeah. It's downstairs.
Ball. This might have been his worst game of the season last night. He played 24 minutes, which is well below what he normally plays. Went 1-for-10 from the field, including 0-for-2 from 3, 2-for-4 from the free throw line, and he finished with looks like just 4 points. And was a negative 13.
And he went through four tubes of Bengay when he got home last night. But the poor guy. But
though the best part of that 1-for-10 is that it was only 10.
Yeah,
it wasn't. You know, some guys are when they're not hitting that the attitude is always well keep firing.
Yeah.
And you know what, I have a lot more respect with a guy who will say, if I'm hitting, I'm just not going to take 20 shots.
Yeah, and to his credit, he had 9 assists to just 1 turnover. So
he did actually
play pretty well from the point guard perspective. 9 assists, 1 turnover. You'll take that all day. But, yeah, just 4 points on 10 shots, 4 rebounds.
Anytime he got hammered, no temper, helped the guy up. I thought he was perfect gentleman, to be honest with you. I thought he was fine.
But he got his ass kicked last
night. he was a 19-year-old playing with 28-year-olds last night, and he happened to be in the wrong spot at the wrong time. Every time some big guy went in, he just happened to be there.
Yeah, he doesn't turn 20 until August either, so he's a young 19.
That could have been you, Matty Weber, going up against Tice or somebody like that last night. Oops, what am I doing next to this guy? So I get a call yesterday, but obviously I get calls for people who listen to the show, and everybody send me an email, and I'll just call. Despite the fact that we're supposed to, wow, everybody we say is a hero, right? There's an awful lot of people in this country and other places that do an awful lot of stuff for people that are never branded anything, right? I mean, people love to be called a hero when they didn't do squat, but other people actually do a lot of stuff for people. And one of the guys said he has a friend that is going to India, you know, every now and again, not every week, but like maybe a week a month, and is working in hospitals over there. And said it is, Kevin, they need you. The supply chain is non-existent, and it's not just for vaccines. And I said, well, how bad is it? He goes, let me help you. There's a rat shortage. I don't have to go any further with that. Let's just say that...
Even the rats aren't getting what they need, huh?
No, the rats are ending up in the pot.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah, they're dinner.
No, I thought you were telling me that the rats were dying off because they couldn't get their stuff either.
No, the rats are looking over their shoulder. And not for a cat. It's that bad in a lot of these areas. And I feel so bad for those people. But what can you do, for God's sake? I mean, it's just, I don't know. So, Kevin, I wanted...
Everybody who has had substantial reliance on China is totally screwed.
Yeah.
And yet China is amping up its exports like crazy. But first of all, you got to back up to a little more than a year ago. So one of the things that always happens with people who source out of China is that they have to stock up ahead of Chinese New Year because the factories all shut down for Chinese New Year. So you get this annual planned disruption anyway. Because they, you know, what happens is people in cities go back to their ancestral homes. That's, you know, that's just how the holiday is celebrated. And, so everything shuts down. So you have to plan. Well, you know what? When they had the worst of their COVID outbreak, was when they returned from Chinese New Year. So everybody, you know, we're behind anyway. People all depleted their safety stocks and then they shut down again. And so as a result, you had the severe disruptions. And we all saw it. We saw it in all the stupidest things at the beginning of last year. And then you had all of the alterations and the demand shifts and everything that happened throughout the year, as government, reacted to it or to be more accurate, I think, as government panicked. I think you saw the same thing everywhere. The problem is that the Chinese are not being especially kind or attentive to who gets reinstated, who gets back on track, and how they get back on track, and how fast they do. So there's a lot of people who are really, really pissed off at their suppliers or the CCP because they're being directed, you know, not to be responsive in many cases.
Let
them die. So what?
Well, it's been, you know, maybe if there's a billion and a half people where you live, you have a different attitude, but I don't think I would. But it's just, I don't think you would either. You look at what's going on. This morning I'm driving in before I picked up Maddie, and somebody comes down and they're talking about a crisis and a shortage of egg cartons. And I'm thinking, if I knew how to make like a real lot of money, I mean, I do pretty good at trading and I do pretty good at managing people's money, but if I really was a bleep, would I be in the egg carton business? And then first thing I do is go on TV or radio and say how there's a tremendous shortage in egg cartons, even though there probably isn't, and double my prices, or withhold them from the market for a week and then double them or something. I mean,
that wouldn't be very ethical, would it?
There wasn't this instant access to media in the 70s when we had the big inflation, the first big inflation issue. This time, is there any more? I mean, how the hell is there? The worst that could happen is I go to the Restaurant Depot a lot, okay? Because I get stuff for the office and everything. Because every place was closed here. We've been working for a year down here. Whatever restaurant closed. Why can't I just buy the egg cartons once, and the next time I go there, I just buy loose eggs? And then I just put them in a carton myself. I mean,
or keep your egg carton and go back and fill it up.
That's what I'm saying. This is not... These are not... I mean, I talked to a client last week who has a buddy in the what do you call the guys that do the sawmill industry. Lumber prices went up so much they're withholding everything from the market for a month. They're sawing away, stockpiling it because they think they're going to get more. These are games that have been they're around since people were doing this with stones, for God's sake, 4,000 years ago. But you don't want to be the station. You don't want to be the cub reporter that gives these people a platform when you know what they're doing, Kevin. I mean, are we really that stupid? I mean,
yes.
Maybe. Hey, I got a question. Obviously, I'm looking at Peloton this morning. The stock had earnings. They're up $4. And I went through it. I want to go through it again because a lot of people listen every day. As I went through some of the numbers with these companies, and I was absolutely quick to point out, do not sell Peloton because I'm going through these numbers. And sure enough, you wouldn't want to sell it because it's up $4 today, right? So that's why you never know where this stuff is going. But you think there's any kind of rationality? Okay, I'm not talking about just in general stock prices. That when that company made it to last year, their revenue doubled to $1.8 billion because of obviously people were staying home and all the health clubs closed. Duh.
Yeah, they became a substitute for a club membership.
So their revenue is 1.8. The stock at one point, and it's probably halved since then, got to $49 billion worth of market cap. Now, I don't know what their loans are outstanding because when you look at, again, you listen to people that are supposed to know what they're talking about. The value of a company is not just in their stock. It's in the value of the stock plus long-term borrowings, right? Now, they might not have none. So if you have no long-term borrowings, yeah, it's stock. But if you have a company that's half long-term debt and half stock, the market valuation of the stock is X, but the value of the country is you got to add the long-term financing to it as well, right? You know, it's not just the stock. And if a stock had 4 shares outstanding and 90% of it was long-term debt, the value of the company is not just the value of the assets.
Are you saying the balance sheet is important?
Yeah, I think it probably is. That's why you have
to make
one.
A long story short.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, what would somebody think the day it traded the 49? When it traded like 135, I know it's down to about half that. What did somebody think was going to have happen, Kevin? I mean, I'm going to say that for that thing to be worth $49 billion on an ongoing basis. Now it was only there for a few days, so say $40 billion. An ongoing basis, anybody rational would say somewhere soon, when I say soon, 4 or 5 years, you know, if interest rates were 10%, it's quicker than 4 or 5 years, it better be 2 or 3. That place, let's say $40 billion, they should be making $8 billion, you know. I'm not going to say, not 8. They should be, $4 billion would be 10 times earnings. They should be making, say, 3 times earning, $3 billion, and they should be sending out people checks for 40% of that, right? So $1.2 billion, right? And yet, are we decades away? Do we honestly think that there's any chance that the $1.8 billion on the COVID year could ever double again? Why would it when people went back to the health club? And if anything, you got a real problem with the $1.8 billion sticking there. So you're talking about a price that in equilibrium in a normal time, the price would mean that they had to earn twice as much as their revenue. Well, name me a company that ever made twice as much as their revenue. The most you can make, if you have a 100% margin, is your revenue, right? Nobody's going to make twice it.
That's a pretty high margin business there, that 200%.
Yeah. I mean, so how do you...
Oh, but that wouldn't be the gross margin. You have to take out the G&A, so we're really talking maybe 300%.
Yeah. So, what I'm saying is, it's not up to me to say, and who knows? Maybe we're going to hit 15 more strains of COVID, and nobody's going to go out for 15 years, and every year it's going to double, and the thing could be the best buy ever, right? Just to prove me wrong. But somewhere, someplace, these numbers in some company is light years away from being anywhere near what some people used to think. Okay, let me get this straight. I'm going to give Maddie $1 million for whatever, his barbecue business, say. Well, Maddie, when am I going to get some money back? Well, you know, we're this year, no, you're not going to get any back. We're building this, we're building that. We just bought this terrific kitchen, and we got to outfit it. And okay, fine. Here's a million. Scratch out the check. One cool mil for you. Well, then what happens after 4 years? I don't know. Well, I mean, do you start making some dough? Do I ever get a check? We don't do no stinking checks for you. Okay. I mean, I'm just asking the question. I'm not dictating. What do you as the investor expect to have happen? Like never? Because the greater fool theory, which I guess is a little too much. The other story is I paid $130 for it. I don't care if they ever trade a dime, they ever make a dime. Some idiot tomorrow is going to pay $160 and I'm going to sell it to him. That's really where we're at with this, I think, Kevin. We've been there before. I mean, it's not like it's the first time it's happened. The Fed's buying, other people are buying. I don't care. I don't even know what their numbers are. All I know is 110 2 weeks ago, 120 last week, 130 this week, and when somebody pays 140 next week, it's all his. Right? I mean, that's kind of where we're, that's known as momentum trading. And it's fine unless you are the last person when the shots start firing and the Lone Ranger's out for lunch and he doesn't come over the hill. You know, where everybody used to say in the pit, everybody turns around and looks at the guy next to him. It's your turn to buy. No, it's your turn to buy. And finally everybody goes, we don't want to buy. You wonder about things like that. And yesterday the Fed, the reason why I'm going through this long story is, yesterday one of the Fed people came out and said they're very concerned about asset prices and how they could be, even for their story was, as long as interest rates remain this low, asset prices aren't too high. So one of the Fed governors came out yesterday and said even with the if interest rates stay at this level, here it is. Fed warns about potential for significant declines in asset prices as valuations climb. Fed Governor Lay Brainard, I don't know, more Lael. Is that a male or female name? L-A-E-L? I never heard that name before. Lael Brainard said the situation bears watching and points up the importance of making sure the system has proper safeguards. Of course, they drop back in. What do you suppose all they care about? Asset prices may be vulnerable to significant declines should risk appetite fall. But then they go on in the article to say, all they care about, not all, but the thing they're most worried about is that their banks, the people that they are paid to keep in business, do the banks have enough money to withstand whatever might happen? Doesn't mean, it's not that if you and I make, you know, lose everything we ever made, it's whether banks are okay. I mean, how many times have you seen that, Kevin? Just saying.
I haven't.
Well, I mean, the last time, what's been the response to 2009? The banks didn't have enough money. Or else they could have weathered the storm. So let's make sure they got twice as much this time. Well, that's interesting. But they're not making sure that you and I have twice as much. Just saying. So what do you guys, right now with the supply chain stuff, I mean, talk about the world's greatest time to be a supply chain teacher. How have you altered your classes? You only got a few minutes for what's going on in the real world here. Like Milton Friedman never could talk about price theory because everybody always knocked him off topic. I got to believe it's got to be easy to knock you off, or else the topics are just spot on to start with.
Oh, I don't stay on topic anyway, so. Yeah. You know, I always tell my class the reason I make PowerPoints is so that I remember where I was.
God. Well, what do you...
But, I mean, seriously, you know, it's very topical. You know, it is great material to be able to teach, because not only can we talk about all of the fundamental stuff, we can also talk about what's really happening in the world today, reacting to it. You know, there's so much news, so much article stuff to share, so much, so much material. Honestly, in the classroom format, I never get to the textbook. You know, they tell them, textbook's on your own. We have real stuff to talk about here. Do the quizzes on your own and read the textbook, do the quizzes, but when it gets right down to it, it's really what's going on today. And professional experience is something that's, you know, great to be able to share, whether it's from warehousing days, whether it's from my days in operations or even IT. Because, you know, I probably have the only transportation management class in the world where my my students all built out the blockchain for a supply chain on a blockchain platform for coffee.
Really? Oh, hey, funny you should mention that.
Because blockchain's revolutionizing the supply chain world, and it really hits home in transportation.
I have two questions for you. Question one is more of a statement. I think I found a new low or a new high yesterday. I met a couple of guys, would-be clients, at a coffee shop on Division. A medium black coffee, guess how much?
$6.
$5.07. I thought that was bad enough.
That is bad. It was just regular coffee? It wasn't like an Americano or something?
No. Well, they take each one, they grind the beans per cup.
So you went to a fancy place.
Well, I don't know. It was just a regular...
Division in what?
Ashland.
Division in Ashland. Okay, yeah.
I got some grilled pie pouring it in from one cup to the other. What does that do?
I don't know. Did it taste good?
Sorry, it was
decent. It looks good. It looks like, that there's a buck just for that, Tom.
Well, she was attractive, so watching her pour it was okay.
I tell you what, the fancy coffee places are everywhere, and it really is a terrific cup of coffee usually. But if you just get the regular coffee, you're almost better off going to, like, Dunkin' Donuts because it doesn't taste that much different, and it's twice as much.
Well, I knew I was in trouble when I walked in and I met these two guys, and I see this girl walking a dog. I see her tied a dog up outside when she'd called ahead for her coffee, and there's nobody in the place. So one guy says to me, "All right, do you want to get a coffee?" And I go, "Sure." He goes, "All right, we'll go grab a table. We'll see you in a while. It's a procedure." I go, "There's nobody here. It's still a procedure." Anyway, Kevin, quick question. You're not going to answer this in a minute, but a lot of this stuff was, back on the egg carton thing, was sort of close to home. I mean, the job I quit in a week because I couldn't stand the place. The cardboard manufacturers were over in Clearing, which, if you know Chicago, it's 64th and like Cicero. There was a string of little factories that did stuff like cardboard boxes. I mean, you name it. And all that stuff was kind of close to home. Those places are all gone. Is all that stuff imported now, or where is all that stuff? I mean, all that stuff is a...
Some of it's imported. Some of it's made in other parts of the country, right-to-work states, especially for low-margin products like that. Right-to-work states have taken a lot of that business because the wages are lower. The wages made, or let me put it this way. Right-to-work doesn't necessarily mean low wages, but a lot of the right-to-work states are also states where the wage scale is generally lower anyway.
But stuff like that can't be... You can't have your egg carton guy 2,000 miles away from the egg guys. It's just inefficient to ship an egg carton 2,000 miles. It has to be.
It's just a math exercise. It's all it is a math exercise. What's the cost of shipping... And what's the cost? What's the labor saving? And it's really that simple. So now, when you're saying what's the cost of shipping, well, if there's no urgency, and I can use rail, which is really cheap, and I can people are gonna be able to stock it so that they can order in large quantities. You get into all of that, and like I said, you do the math and. I don't think there's a lot of people doing just-in-time for egg cartons, although they kind of do just-in-time for the eggs themselves because the hens are only going to lay them so frequently.
Well, next week, maybe talk a little bit. Are the wages really that much cheaper in Mississippi than they are in, Rockford or Freeport or these towns that are losing people right and left? They can't be that much cheaper. Maybe they are. I don't know.
Really can't be that much cheaper. But again, if you shave a buck an hour off of the labor content on a box, also remember that the other issue you get with some of the packaging in boxes is simply that the custom jobs. You go buy a cell phone and what's the packaging look like there? It's still cardboard, but it's very logo intensive. It's built to secure the phone, to make sure it doesn't get jostled. All that. Well, they get paid a whole lot more for that than they do for making egg cartons.
So if it says, so
they can crank out the egg cartons fast, but they can crank out the other stuff fast too. So the priority for production, especially if there's disruptions. And remember, the same disruptions that apply to lumber are going to apply to paper products. If you have disruptions and you have to prioritize, you're prioritizing the high margin items.
So if Maddie wants Weber's eggs, where the eggs, where the chickens all get along, and that's going to cost them more?
The free range chickens.
But if the packaging is going to be really, really special, then it's going to cost more too.
I could see him where the roosters are all perfect gentlemen.
Jill buys eggs that somehow come in a plastic carton.
Oh yeah, they're the best. They're the free range ones.
Yeah, that's all she buys. So I haven't even seen the classic styrofoam carton in forever.
Oh yeah, well, she gets the good stuff. The ones where the eggs all, or the chickens all get along.
The place I go usually has cardboard cartons.
SB Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 21. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howes, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 23. Individual stocks on the Dow. We've got Goldman Sachs up $1.60. Home Depot up $1.39. We got the gold patch up a little bit. GDX up 28. We got Freeport Macmoran, which actually slept through yesterday a little bit, is up $1 today. So the copper's on a drive. Carl, how are you? I'm sure you got you long soybeans, you long corn. What's corn's like $7 a bushel, for God's sake?
I'll tell you what, I think if I want to be anything, I want to be long random length lumber.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Well, the 2x4 is 8 footers.
The people that say there's no inflation, I don't know what you're smoking.
Well, you know, I've been kind of talking, obviously it's a subject that I'm on a lot, maybe too much, but I was mentioning that if you had a escalation clause in your contract, and you were foolish enough, well, not foolish enough, people have done this forever, they had a CPI clause in there. These guys lying to everybody is costing you a fortune. They're not helping you at all.
Yeah, I'm real, you know, this whole premise that we've got going on right now, I'll tell you what, it's starting to show up at the bar, okay? And you know where the problem comes from. Fed, right? Comes from with inflation expectations, or at least this is what Powell, you know, likes to run, and all these other guys love to run as their, you know, their line of BS. Why it's not a big deal, because expectations are anchored. People are not going to alter their behavior because, you know, they think this is transitory. This is going to be gone in, you know, a week or a month or whatever. I had a bunch of work I had to do yesterday, and after I got done, I decided I was going to go have an adult beverage at the local pub. And that's all anybody was talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, for months and months and months, all everybody was talking about was the COOF and, you know, all the BS around that. Now, all everyone's talking about is, oh, by the way, this is reassessment here in our county, and property assessments are in a 5-year cycle here. And everyone's assessment's up 50%.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what do you think is going to happen with that?
They're going to have to lower it.
You're not that dumb, right?
Well, they're going to have to lower the multiplier. I mean, there's no way you're going to give everybody 50%. Well, I'm not saying, well, I won't say no way, but probably 50% is a little much in 1 year.
Well, yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, though. I commented on this on your show a number of years ago, a couple of years back, and at that, this is exactly how they essentially dispossessed my mother's estate of its value, in that the property taxes went up by close to a factor of three over the space of 15 years.
Oh, yeah, well, that I can understand, sure.
And you know, and well, and of course, because whoever buys the place, whoever owns the place has to pay those, right? That directly depresses the acceleration rate in the value of the property.
Well, it also goes to, I'll use the term people's, not naivety, I won't say stupidity, but naivety, because I'm right with this group. Anybody who thinks that if you go to Florida where they don't have an income tax, you could be in the group that has massive income and is happy living in a trailer. I'll give you a double wide. I mean, you could do, but don't think for a second that most of these states. I actually had I don't know where I found it. One of the listeners sent it to me a while ago. They listed all the states in terms of taxes you pay, and they broke it up for, you know, stages kind of in life or whatever. It was pretty well done. Of course, I lost it, and I can't find it. I've read it on the web that I really like. I lose. But this had to do with total state taxation, and I'm looking there. I would have put Wyoming, you know, as, you know, the one of the best states to live in, right? And they had it at number one in taxes, because I don't know if they have an income tax. Property taxes aren't very big. The sales tax is almost non-existent. But their estate tax, if you happen to be a rich guy that moves there, which they're getting, your estate tax is through the roof. So, I mean, it's not like most of these states that there's ever a free lunch sort of anywhere. I mean, if you're a big shot in Manhattan and you move to Florida and you're at that time of life where the income tax is your bugaboo, yeah. But if all of a sudden, like you say, it's like your mom, and all of a sudden you say, I want to buy a nice big place and the taxes are 10 grand a year, well, 15 years from now they're 30, well, that's a problem, you know, right? So you kind of, you don't ever get anything free. It's a question of where are you in your time of life and where is this state and what they tax you at, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, the thing is, I owned a very nice house on the North Shore of Chicago. Okay, and you know, technically a Deerfield address, just on the Cook County side of the line, and I know that what that address is, and so you know, you can go on Zillow or anywhere else and look up, you know, hey, what's the property tax assessment? It's well north of 20 grand a year now. It was less than half that when I owned it.
Well, if you're in Lincoln Park, it's probably 50% higher than that. And oh, by the
way,
but
that's the thing is, I mean, like I look at that and I go, you know, I made good money, and you know, even after I sold my business, which, you know, I still got decent income coming in. You know, life is not terrible, but good God,
yeah. Well, but what do you get for it? I mean, that's
the problem. Is what it, you know? I mean, the premise at the time was, well, what you got was you got a really decent school system, right?
Well, right.
Is that necessarily true now? I mean, would you not, you know, send your kids to private school if you could?
Well, I mean, therein lies the rub. I mean, if you live in, let's say, I don't know what the school is. I'm not a big North Shore dude, but let's say you're Deerfield, and everybody's paying 20 grand a year to go to Ignatius in the city. Okay, and everybody's taxes in the city in Lincoln Park are 30 to 35. Plus 20 at Ignatius, you know, plus God knows what else, paying in front to park in front of your own house. You move to Deerfield, and your taxes are 30, but now your kid goes to New Trier, say, which is at least worth 20, but now it's included in your 30. Not to mention the fact you might have two kids, and you don't have to pay to park in front of your house. God's sake, you go join a country club in your flat, you know, with the club. I mean, you're not even on the same page. So, you know, it depends on. Plus, I mean, when my poor little guy Scruff was still with me, I think I got sandbagged on a dog, Carl. Imagine that. They told me he was 10, and I think I got sandbagged. I think he was actually like 12. So we only had like a couple of years where he was okay, and then I basically took care of him for a couple of years, which I didn't mind at all. I mean, it was a, you know, a love of whatever. You take care of the little guys. But we used to, of course, he, when I'd get up to, John and I were on the air at 5 to 6 in those days on the score. So I'd walk the little sucker at, you know, 3:45. But then on Saturday, I'm like, Scruff, it's Saturday. He didn't care. So we're out there. One day I'm walking down the block, and we get the little, what's the little name of the park down the block, Minnie?
Adams?
Yeah. Well, they've got a water fountain there and all that stuff. But they have, in the summertime, they have daycare, right, Minnie? Or it's afternoon care or something. And
day camps and everything.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, it's 2 below 0, Karen. And I see all these people lined up on deck chairs. They're BSing each other, having a good old time. Somebody's bringing in the coffee, and somebody's got a pint of brandy. And I'm sitting there going, let me get this straight. $35,000 a year for taxes, and I got to sit out all night when it's 2 below 0 to get my kid in daycare? I mean, how do these people put up with that? I mean, are they out of their mind?
They're waiting in line to register?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, yeah. I mean, don't you think that for that kind of dough, you shouldn't be able to get shut out of the daycare? I mean, for God's sake, can't you hire one other person? I don't know what it takes to run a daycare thing, but how do you get spun out the revolving door? You know, your ass is out the door on something when you're paying that kind of freight. Don't you think that everybody could get in?
Well, you'd think, but you know, I mean, it's. I think part of that is it's the old aura of exclusivity that you have to maintain, and of course then you have the inflation thing. I mean, I think there's a very interesting thing going on with regards to the whole inflationary side of things that goes beyond the property tax situation, and it's happening in the job market. We're going to see what shows up in the report here in a little bit. But I Florida is cutting off their no excuse unemployment at the end of the month, and a couple of other states have said that they're killing the kicker, that added $300 or $600 a week or whatever it is. I think it's $300 now, but it was $600 for a while.
Yeah,
and around here, there's help wanted signs in every window. And the problem is that if you're getting paid $15 an hour, which is what $600 a week comes out to sit around and get drunk, why would you go work?
Well, you sent that out yesterday, Carl, and as usual, I always agree with you. By the way, don't let me, both of you guys, don't let me get away with this from this inflationary expectations, because it's not just, as somebody would tell you on CNBC, in the what's in the TIFFs, that kind of thing, or in some stupid table that these guys read. It's in what you and I do, and I don't think these guys understand that. But let's get back to what you were just saying, though. Somewhere along the line, Carl, the world changes, and a lot of people feel that they get to have people work for them for like really next to nothing. And I'm going to say, just in Chicago, for instance, since last year. I'll remember to this day, they closed the bars the night before St. Paddy's Day. If you were laid off from a job for $10 an hour, and all of a sudden the phone rings, hey, Matty, guess what? Great news. You got your job back. Well, okay, do you think I've been sitting here waiting for this call for now 14 months?
Right.
You know, and oh, by the way, how much you paying? Oh, what do you mean? $10 an hour? Well, wait a minute. In the last year, I moved to Hammond. And now the toll to come over to Skyway is up $1.50 each way. The stupid mayor has put, if I happen to go down the wrong street, I'm getting a $35 or $100 ticket. And oh, by the way, all the parking things went up. So now it's going to cost me X to park in the place. Well, now downtown they have it, because nobody here, but other places they have. That $10, it ain't worth squat anymore. You better do better than that. I mean, I'm with you on the part that the federal government's sending the $600 to people. You know, might have been over the top. But the thought that things have not changed for these workers since last year is also pretty ignorant, too, because it has.
Well, but that is inflation expectations. That's exactly you know, that goes to the core of it all, right? I mean, it's not just how much money you get. It's what you have to pay.
Well, that's, these aren't expectations. These are real. I mean, you're not getting it,
but people don't think it's going away. That's the point. It's not just today. It's what do you believe is going to be the case tomorrow? You know, you drive to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you're going to get that $300 ticket.
Oh, by the way, gas is up 50% since last year. So.
Well, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, well, you know, it's not $20 a week now to fill my tank. 40.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, the idea, I mean, when you were talking about expectations, and I lobbed the one out there without enough preamble, but people will do, people who are withholding, I'm accusing the egg crate guy from holding them off the market. The guy's holding them, you know, because they called me. Well, why would he call me to tell me a lie? But they're holding their 2x4s off the market because they think they're going to be higher again next month. Okay, well, I'm going to say without, you know, tell me I'm a knucklehead, which I could be for a lot of other reasons, but I'm going to say that since prices of gas now are going up every week, that if you could take the amount of gallons of gas that people have, the biggest storage tank in the U.S. or in the world is in the cars of people in the U.S., the gas tanks. And I remember reading this because I, you know, all the way back to the gas crisis, for God's sake. On a normal day, equilibrium, you could pretty much guess that they're like, what, 45% full? It's not quite half, right, Carl? That you could say, how much gas is an inventory in the U.S., and there's 250 million cars. The average tank is 18 gallons. The average person has 8. You can do the math. Okay, so now if you say, everybody now thinks that next week it's going to be $4 a gallon, I'm going to say that the average person, average now, because I'm going to fill up the Suburban. I mean, I'm trying not to be an idiot. But in doing that, what's right for me, if everybody does the same thing, I just created a massive problem in the system.
Oh, yeah.
If everybody, because that's how, it's like if everybody withholds their lumber thinking it's going up next week, this is not some stupid table that the Fed people are staring at and waiting for 6 months confirmation. This is tomorrow, right? The 2x4 is now $10, not $7.50. And that's the $2.50 it was 2 years ago. This happens instantly. If all of a sudden the average person in this country now has 2 gallons more in a tank because they think prices are going up, I guarantee you prices will go up 10% just because of that, Carl.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing is that there was when prices were very low and nobody thought they were going to stay that way, that, you know, they started to creep up a little bit. I'd go out to get some groceries, and hey, I got 3/4 of a tank. I'm topping it off.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, why would I not? I got room for it in the tank.
Well, I mean, back in '73, you might be too young for that. If you saw a place with a line, I mean, they had gas. You pulled in. By the time you got to the front, you needed some, right?
Well, yeah. Oh no, I do remember it. I was a kid, but I remember it very well.
Yeah.
When, you know, when mom would go to the store and there was a gas station right down the street from the, you know, from the grocery store, literally, you know, driver distance with, you know, with the golf club.
Yeah.
And if there were cars out in front of it, we stopped. We might have had to wait for 20 minutes, but we stopped because they had fuel.
Well, remember when you probably don't, but I vaguely, this happened a few times back and then, because then there was the Israeli war and there was other stuff. Where all of a sudden, Matty, it was bizarre because all of a sudden the prices, whatever the crisis was, would ease. And then the prices would start coming down. You drive by gas stations. In those days, they weren't all convenience stores. There's nobody in there. Because
right.
the entire country had a full tank, right? And all of a sudden, you go by, how come nobody's buying gas there? Because everybody had gas up to their eyeballs, pretty much.
Well,
right?
then the other thing that they were doing for a while was you could only buy 5 gallons.
Yeah.
So...
You can follow
all the tanks set to shut off after 5 gallons, all the pumps.
You can follow us on Twitter at Stocks and Jocks. Robert writes in, Chief and Carl, you're beating around the bush. If you can't find work for the going rate, how about this? Pay more.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. And when I mentioned this.
Well, okay. How do you do that when you're a restaurant and you'd like to actually have somebody come in and buy your food?
Well, that's the whole. And we talked about this before, Carl. My buddy,
that's the spiral that, you know, that everyone says, oh, the Fed says isn't going to happen. Yes, it is.
Well, if you want to be a nasty economist, which I try not to be, you could be a real bleep and say, there's no such thing as a shortage. The price just isn't high enough. Right? I mean, if you want to be a bleep.
Well, my problem with people like Robert, okay, so he's right in that, you know, the economics is all about competition, right? I mean, that's the point, is that labor is a competitive force, just like goods and services are a competitive force. But the problem with setting floors like this, which is what that kind of unemployment compensation does, is that when you put a floor underneath something, then everything in the supply chain that relies on that gets bumped up by that floor.
Well, but it also works its way through the system, because everything has, I use the term factors of production. Robert's going to drive me into something I probably shouldn't go with regular people. There's 100 things that have to happen before you get your pork chop or steak on the plate in a restaurant, right?
Right.
And one of them happens to be the labor of the person at $10 an hour or 11 or 12. But somewhere along the line, you have a deal with the guy who, washes the linens, right? You have a lease. And when you went and got your lease, I asked my buddy Butcher Al in Restaurant Al when he was complaining when the prices, this was a year and a half ago, the prices went from $10 to 11, 11 and a half, because he said, I couldn't get anybody. I said, I had the exact same conversation with Robert. I mean, that Robert having with us. I said, how much are you paying? He goes, well, $10. That's the going rate. I go, sounds to me like it isn't. Duh.
Right.
So what if you paid 11 and a half? And he said, well, I'd be fine, but I can't afford 11 and a half. And I said, okay, next question. I'm not grilling you, because he was between shots. I go, if you knew you had to pay 11 and a half, would you have signed this lease? And he goes, you got me there. Hell no. So it's,
that's exactly right. That's the problem, though, is this externality comes in that was not part of your planning, was not part of your economic model, and it breaks the model.
Well, if you're an Uber guy, okay, whatever it is, these little they call them what's the term? There's an economic term for them, Carl. They're an externality. They're a shock. All of a sudden, Uber guy decides I can charge $10. Or even cab companies. These are the rates. All of a sudden, next week, gas is double. Well, all of a sudden, those rates aren't so good anymore, are they?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's all about, but it works its way through the chain, because the one number that's not going to change is how much you can charge the patron and how much a patron's going to come in. If you charge $40 for a plate of pasta, you're going to get 10 people. And if you charge 20, you're going to get 40 people, probably, whatever it is. That's not going to change. So, on the other side, How do I get there to where the plate of pasta that I can get on the table for $8 and charge $20, $8 is a lot, and charge $20, how can I remain in business and pay my people and make a profit for myself? So these numbers are constantly in flux, right? And that's what we talk about on the show. I think a lot of people, unless that's what you do, economics or something, you don't realize how much everything's in flux.
This is why when I was running my internet company, I was always watching these economic numbers, not just the jobs report, but also, you know, the federal budget, the Medicare and Medicaid spend, where the tax funds were going, and people are like, oh no, you know, you can just, well, no, I can't. There's 99 other competitors in my marketplace. I can't just turn around and say I'm going to charge $2 more because half my customers will flee and go to the other guy.
Well, but you were in a business that you didn't have pricing power. So right now, all you, even though they don't say it the same way I would say it, all the talking heads on CNBC and Fox and everybody else, what they're really saying is you need to invest in the companies that have the pricing power and have to find those places. Because somebody is going to show up and the price of lumber is going to double, and he's going to say, so what? I just doubled plus 10%. My prices in the Home Depot aisle. I think that the combination of combinations and cartels, monopolies, duopolies, whatever you want to call it, I think this is exceptionally dangerous, Carl. I mean, I really do. And I felt that way a long time.
Well, yeah, it is. And, you know, the problem is that as you shrink the competitive landscape, which is one of the things that's happened during this pandemic, okay, you've dramatically shrunk the competitive landscape in a number of markets. A whole bunch of places. When you do that, the people who take it in the short are the people on the far end, which is you and I.
Right.
And everyone says, oh, no, that's it. You know, it's great. You know, I got Amazon. They'll bring my stuff to my door. No, you only have Amazon. That's bad.
Right. Well, if you own a hamburger joint, how's that for a sell site, and there's 40 others around, all of a sudden now you're going to be competing with somebody who maybe has owned his building, you know, since forever. So he doesn't have, if the city doubles the taxes, well, he's still going to have to pay more taxes, but maybe he didn't have a bad lease in the first place that now the person can come in and raise your lease tomorrow. So maybe that guy's going to be a little slow to raise the prices of hamburgers, but now you got to go with him. But I'm going to say right now, if Home Depot, I'll say this, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't think so. If Home Depot raises the price of the 2x4 from $5 to $7.50, if he shows up, he's calling back and says, the phone call is not Home Depot's at $7.50. We should stay at $6 and get more business. They're saying they're charging $7.50. That's now the going rate. Let's raise ours to $7.50. Would be
right.
I mean, that's not the competition you were in, I don't think.
No, as a former business owner and as somebody who was in an extremely competitive market, I would have loved to have that spot.
Okay. Carl, we got to go to break. When we come back, we'll have the numbers. Then you can talk about what you are imminently qualified for. Jobs imminent. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber, we have Carl here in a second, but
Just a bit outside.
Just a bit. The million job number came in at 266, and unemployment rate, they were crowing about to be 5.8, 6.1. We'll get Carl's comment on that, but it's a ways away. But S&P futures still up 12, NASDAQ is up 200, Dow up 89. So it's goosed the hell out of gold and silver here all of a sudden, which is interesting. But we'll get that in a second. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 26, call that flat. Shanghai down 22.6%. Hang Seng down 26.1%. Not much there. Over in Europe, DAX was up 200, now it's up 168, still up a bunch. 1.1%, FTSE up 43.6, CAC around up 11, only 0.1, so they're the laggard. Yesterday, we had the Dow up 318, S&P up 34, NASDAQ up 50, so we're still pushing to have day two of that. Bonds, 1.49, so down 7 basis points. That's a big move. Bund, minus 0.25, again, 2 basis points, that's another pretty big move. Japan, positive 0.08. Oil, down 40 cents, 64.31. Brent down 36 cents, 67.73. Natural gas up a penny. And our Bob, which we've been talking about, is minus a penny at 209. Gold, however, went from being down to being up. Gold is up $5 to 18.20. Silver down 12 cents. And this must be delayed because the GLD is actually up $1.71, which is like 18 bucks. That's the ETF for gold. Copper up 9 cents, 269. And we have our favorite crypto up 999. Bitcoin is 56,952. Now, Mark Cuban must have bought one of the cryptos. He's telling everybody else to go out and buy it. Well, boy, didn't we like make this illegal with the Securities Act of 33, buying something and told everybody else to go buy it?
Oh, my God. All you got to do is be on Twitter, and yeah, it's just pump and dump city, and no one cares.
It is great. It is unbelievable. And Manny, we got for us Traffic Weather Sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues to report that just popped up on the inbound Eisenhower just before Morgan. So right as you're in the West Loop there approaching downtown, it says there's a crash on both shoulders. I don't know if that's one crash that made it to both shoulders or two separate crashes, but apparently both shoulders are affected on the inbound Eisenhower just before Morgan, and that's causing significant congestion inbound on I-290, so keep that in mind. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy, but traffic building steadily on the inbound Kennedy. Stevenson, same could be said there. No crashes to report, but heavy traffic, especially as you approach the circle. On the south side, there's one crash to report. It's a rollover on the ramp to the Bishop Ford. This is on I-57 on the northbound side. So right as you're getting onto I-94 from 57, there's a rollover crash on the ramp. Not sure how that happens, but that's affecting both I-57 and the Bishop Ford with crews arriving on the scene. Off the expressways, it looks like one crash to report. That's in the southwestern suburb, 75th Street at Illinois 53. Weather today, lots of sunshine, but still very cold for this time of year. A high of just 55, that's about 11 degrees below normal. Right now it is partly cloudy and 46 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 97 today. Right now it's clear and 73. In sports, the Bulls welcome Zach LaVine back and blew out the Hornets in Charlotte. 120-99 was the final in that one. Blackhawks won as well, topping Carolina in overtime 2-1. In baseball, Cubs and White Sox were both off yesterday. The Cubs will host the Pirates this afternoon at Wrigley. That's a 1:20 first pitch. White Sox are down in Kansas City to take on the Royals. They'll get underway tonight at 7:10 Central Time. The Diamondbacks played last night, and they lost to the Marlins 3-1. Chief.
So do we think these numbers are going to stump the Carl?
No, they're not going to stump the Carl. Although I got to tell you, the market reaction to this is amusing, to put it mildly.
Why?
Yeah, because the SPOOs are basically flat, the Russell's down a little bit, and the NASDAQ is skyrocketing. But the real news is in the 10-year Treasury, in the ZN, and the Treasury futures, gold futures, and if you look at the currency crosses, the dollar is, the DX is dumping, but the whole reason is it's against the yen.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this going, so basically what we have here, by the way, in the household survey, the number's positive 667, unadjusted. Okay.
All right,
positive 971 last month. So there is some gamery going on in the establishment survey and the birth-death model.
All right, I'm looking at the one you tell me not to look at, the one that everybody would look at because it's the first one you get.
Right.
I've got the March to April in the employment. This is the adjusted up 330.
Yeah, but again, leave the Bureau of Lies and Scams games out of it. Just go off the off the raw data from the households plus 667. But the thing about that is that now there's an anomaly in the table, which is interesting. When I first punched the numbers into my spreadsheet and looked at it, my eyes popped out of my head. Then I realized what happened. April was the first month that we had the really awful number. Right, when we went from 4.4% unemployment to 14.7%. Okay.
You mean last year?
So,
yeah.
So the interesting thing is the 12 month delta is plus 17 million.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the reason is because we fell off the cliff in April of last year, right?
Right.
So the real bottom line here is that the peak was 158.017 on the household, and that was in February. March was 155, and we're now at 151. So we're still neg four million ish. Okay.
Right. We had. How do we get in the end of 2020? We had 160.7. I'm going to say in the labor force, and we're back up to that almost exact number, right? But in the meantime, we got down. 1 month we were down. We lost 4 and 5 million people in the labor force. How do you do that? Now we've made those people.
Well, they end up in that that NILF number, which is long term disability, things
okay.
like that. That number, by the way, is up 117 month over month. So, despite the the supposed improvement, we don't have people coming back into the workforce. We have them leaving it.
See now, and how does that adjustment work? I've got on that we don't know what column that what they're doing column. I've got it down 330,000 from last month.
Well, that's the adjusted number. I don't use those because
okay.
I don't trust a single bit of anything I see coming out of there. Anything comes out of the BLS, if there's an adjustment factor in it, I ignore it.
Okay. I guess the question comes, why do you believe the raw numbers?
Because the survey is not subject to Joe Biden's people getting on the phone and telling him he wants something.
Okay.
Same thing. This is not just a Democrat thing. Let's face it. Trump was doing the same thing. They all do this. It's these so-called birth death numbers and these seasonal adjustments are garbage, especially when there's something weird going on. I mean, if you had a steady state labor force, you might be able to come up with a reasonable statistical adjustment. The problem is that's never true when it comes to labor.
Well, the number that I always the reason why I harp, not harp on it, but I fixate on it, is that I read this thing a few times, that there's someplace somewhere that you can't keep track, can't accurately keep track of new businesses starting versus folding, because a lot of those employees are 1099s. You probably can you could in securities firms, because everybody pays, well, not everybody, actually. We pay everything with a regular, regular paycheck, but there are, I'm sure there's 1099 brokers, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that data doesn't really get reconciled until at least the quarterly filings, and if not the annuals.
Well, that's what I mean. So,
now,
I'm thinking out loud here because I want Maddie's opinion, because there's a lot of pals that are out there and doing, I'll use the term freelance stuff. You wonder now, for a long period of time, so many people, I think, had to be out of work because people didn't even want plumbers to come into their house without masks on and stuff. I mean, you'd rather have a leaky toilet than have somebody come in the door. I mean, it got that bad, I think. Did we ever? But those people, you don't count anyway until the end of the year. I mean, you don't know whether the Carl Chief Maddie group decides to build three houses this year, and we, all of a sudden we got 15 guys we're paying, I won't say cash, but we're paying, we're only reporting their income at the end of the year. And all of a sudden, whether we hired 15 guys and all of a sudden the next year we fire them, you don't really know that, but somebody's supposed to make that sort of a, an estimate. Where would you put that right now, Carl?
That's the tough part. But see, the thing is that's where the household survey, if you use the raw data, you're at least getting some of it. Because there, even though, there's no accuracy in any survey, right? I mean, it's just the way it is. But they actually call people. So you're getting, did you work last week? And that's what it is it's, and so you get some weird stuff in the data because during the survey week is when that happens.
How do you call people today? Just out of curiosity. I did some statistics and we did a couple of little polls in college just to practice, but how the hell do you find somebody?
I would assume it's a random algorithm of some kind. I would hope.
I mean, you don't call anybody at home anymore.
Well, no, I'm assuming that they just randomly hit numbers. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Well, I have a landline strictly because in case I have to talk to a client at night or if it's
right.
A conference call, still the electronics are so much better on a landline. I mean, if you want to, and I'm sure he does this, so I shouldn't really say it, but I'll say it anyway. I mean, if you want to be rude, be six lawyers piling in their smartphones, even though they're better now than they used to be, at $1,000 an hour, and you can't understand anybody, right? I mean, if you're going to pile into a conference call, at least use your desk phone. I mean, even though that gap has, I mean, when we first started the show, what was the first thing you should tell everybody, Maddie, when they called in, use the landline, right? But
yeah.
Now there's probably not that much. I'm going to say the cells have gotten pretty darn good, so it's moved better. But
and the landlines aren't using the old school analog phone line anymore.
Right.
They're all pretty much connected to a digital line
right.
Anyway.
Right. So you
right.
they've sort of moved together, but I guess what I'm saying is I have a landline. I don't even know the number, to be honest with you. I mean, I could call my cell and find it out. Whenever the thing rings, I've never answered it once because nobody's got it. I just assume it's a robocall. So, I mean, how's somebody going to survey me?
Well, yeah, I think that's the, that's kind of the thing is, but I just, I don't know. I look at all this with what's going on in the market reaction. I think it's really kind of, this one bothers me, or it bothers me a lot. Look at who's moving. Amazon is up substantially.
Yep, it's 50 bucks.
All right. Yeah, and well, of course, this is totally explained. This, why the Nasdaq futures are up, substantially. But take a look at the smaller companies. Look at the Russell. Not so much, right?
I got Google up 30.
And then the S&P is basically flat pre-report,
right?
And so I look at that and I go, so what you're basically saying here is that we're not hiring people, but it's good for the monopolists. Isn't that what we just spent the first half hour talking about?
Well, are we dropping back into this? Boy, I hated trading this. I had to trade this in 1981, Carl, and I hated it then. Where every stare at the money. Well, where we stare at the money supply number every Thursday night, which now they're not giving us. And it was if the news was good, you sold the market. If the news it was the other way around, because if the news was good, it means the Fed could stop doing what they're doing. I'm sure somebody somewhere in the back of their mind is saying, if this number really was a million, even Powell and his gang of whatever you want to call them, next week would have a real hard time saying they really needed to buy $8 billion worth of crap next Tuesday. I mean, even though they would still say it, they're turning that bus around, but there's pressure to get them to turn it around. You start talking about a million people in one, it's pretty hard to say, we need to put money to work today. Right? I mean, why? I mean, you just popped a million people into the market in 1 month, for God's sake. I mean,
the other thing is the divergence between this number and the ADP number is striking.
Yeah.
Okay, the ADP number, when I saw it the other day, and I saw it on Wednesday, it comes out on Wednesdays. When I saw that, I was expecting this thing was going to be a monster because I don't think there's been really any change of substance in government hiring, and that's what they don't capture, right? And ADP does enough payroll that it's a decent statistical survey, but there have been times that they've been wildly off from the official government numbers, and this was one of them. The other thing that's interesting, and I don't like the implications of this. You've got the dollar going down, you got oil down.
But the good news
is, looking at the oil futures here, and I'm like, okay, I got, you know, that should be the other way around, right? Because oil is pricing out, the dollar's getting weaker, oil should go up.
You're missing the good news, though. I'm long gold and silver for my clients.
Well, if you're long gold, you're having a nice, happy day.
Here's a comment. If you can't even closely forecast monthly jobs, how can you even pretend to predict growth or inflation or anything for the next year?
Well, you can't. And the thing is that anybody that thinks that the inflationary pressure is not real and is not showing up and is not impacting behavior and expectations is out of their mind.
Well, it's the people that, I don't want to take a shot here at young people, especially young ladies, but there was a lady on CNBC, not one of the employees, but a guest. She was outraged to beat the band. She was beside herself, as Audrey would say, when Warren Buffett and the other guy, Munger, who's 96 or something, they came out and they go, what are you talking about? We're raising prices everywhere. Everybody's raising prices up. It's all we're doing all day, or something along those lines. There's inflation everywhere. And she comes out accusing them of being old. And how they, why, you did this, I mean, she obviously, she must be, long bonds or something. but when you got two guys that are running, how many businesses are those two guys running? 20? But they're saying they're raising prices all over the place and everybody's raising them to them. You're not going to believe them? They at age 96 and the guy's got billions of dollars, he needs to lie to me? I mean, really? I mean, so anybody who says they're not raising prices now, I find it hard to believe. If they can't, it's because they can't.
Well, yeah, when you get down to it, that's a huge problem.
Well, it is.
Because where do you know, you say, well, I mean, there, and people say, well, you know, you're not paying enough, just pay more. Excuse me, what do you think is driving what's going on right now?
Right. Well, like I said, I said it 2 days in a row, so I'll be very, very brief. When I did the stuff for Pullman, when we were doing our, railroad cars, we got 100% relief on CPI from the city of Boston.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that when I did the stuff for everybody else, the union got, boy, Carl, it's been so long, I'm going to say they got 80% adjustment, 75%. It wasn't 100. I know it wasn't 100. But it was high, but I'm going to say 80, 85, 75, somewhere in there. And I'm going to say on our suppliers, trucks, air conditioners, seats, lights, maybe the aluminum guys and the steel guys. I don't think the guys, lighting fixtures, I'm not so sure. Doors, I'm not so sure. I'm going to say 75% of the car, we had to turn around and adjust those people up. So we picked up 25% there, and we picked up 20% on labor. So Pullman was a winner on inflation. If it would have been Carl's lighting fixtures, and that was a big contract for you, and in the 4 years it took us to build them, or 3.5, inflation was up 25-30%, and you didn't get an adjustment, we could have put you out of business, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Sure.
And so, I mean, it's not like that this isn't really big numbers for people and really a really big deal where you fall on this. I mean, whether you're one that it's like, I don't care what you bought your umbrellas are, if it's a rainstorm, you're doing better than you thought, right? It's the same thing.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the problem is the guys who have the ability to be price setters, they're not price takers.
Right.
They are, and that's the old securities thing, right, too, is, who's the price maker versus the price taker. But the same is true in any business, and if you're on the right side of that, then this is God love you kind of time. But if you're on the wrong side, oh my Lord.
Yeah. Love to have Maddie's bro is a big time chef, and I'm going to say that he could tell us probably chapter and verse, that if all of a sudden there's inflation that runs up, how much the restaurants he's worked in, and some have been fine dining, some haven't, how much they could raise their stuff for dinner, and how much, there's probably five ketchup suppliers. I'm going to say those guys are powerless. I'm just going to take a stab. Because if inflation's 10%, they're lucky they get 3. So they're losers. Because there's probably enough of them. If you go into a place right now, if you go out and have dinner tonight, and you really care about this, not that you should, just be enjoying yourself, I'm going to say that for whatever reason, restaurateurs think, I don't know if it's a syntax or whatever, they're going to raise the price of the beer or the wine and the drink more than they are the hamburger because it's not a lead item. You pick up the menu, the first thing you're going to see is the hamburger is $13.50 and 2 weeks ago it was $10. But right. if you raise the price of the wine a buck, who cares? I mean, you care, but you're probably still going to have it. And you know, the thought that, I just had 3 glasses of wine at $9 a throw, and that wine I just saw at Binny's for $9 a bottle. You know, I mean, I do stuff like that because I talk about it on the show. But I mean, clearly there's nothing that went up on that particular wine bottle that caused you to raise that price by 20%, right? Oh, Maddie, go ahead. We got a Twitter question.
Yeah, Lewis writes in, month over month and year over year average worker earnings both above forecast. A bunch of states need to quickly drop all of their COVID mandates and end government overcompensation COVID benefits like South Carolina and Montana just did before it gets out of hand, which it might already have.
Well, I don't, I already replied to that. Right? Two words, too late.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, that's the old, from Star Trek, raise shields, too late.
Well, before you, and again, as everybody knows, one of my themes is even stuff you don't agree with, you can somewhat learn from. And I'm gonna say that the $600 a week, I don't think I'd have gone that high. If I was in Congress or wouldn't have voted that high. But I think it's pretty obvious to everybody as we entered the COVID series that the median wage in this country, which is now $36,000, $37,000, probably higher since then, but still on the debt clock, which transpires about $15 an hour. Now, that's the median. I don't see how anybody right now can be making $10 an hour unless you're a high school kid at McDonald's. I mean, that just is so far afield.
In a small rural town or something, maybe.
That's so far afield from...
Well, that depends on where you live. It really does.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there is a wide disparity in cost of living.
Right. But if you're...
Right, in a place like this, where I am now, you've got two big problems that are immediately squeezing people. And one of the huge ones is this rent moratorium, where, and you've got all these people running around saying, oh, no, you look at the surveys, everyone's paying, this is just, there's just a handful of people that are scamming and not that. It's not really an issue, it's not really... Oh, really? Go try to find a rental unit. Everyone's taking them off the market, or they're ending up in the hands of the big corporate guys. And the reason is, no one's willing to take the risk that somebody moves in and doesn't pay and can't get evicted.
Well, right. Carol, how's that going to... We only have 2 minutes, but how's that going to come down? It's not like the renters that aren't paying are doing a sinking fund. I mean, what do they think is going to happen at the end of 6 months, or all of a sudden have 6 months' rent to give to somebody?
Well, no, the landlord's going to eat it because they have no money, so you sue them and they're bankrupt.
Yeah.
That does you a lot of good, right?
But, I mean, we only got like that much time. But take me through what's supposed to happen. The person's been there for 7 months. Now, I would hope that if the rent's $1,000, that if you can't boot somebody for $1,000, if come on bad times, they're at least giving you $800 or something. I mean, you're not being...
Oh, no, they're giving you zero.
Well, if they're giving you zero, and all of a sudden now at the end of 8 months, they now owe you $8,000 and they're not about to pay, how quick can you get them out?
Oh, well, but does it matter? You still ate the $8,000.
Right, but if it all of a sudden... You got three sheriffs.
You still got to go through the whole eviction procedure and go get the judgment and have the sheriff come. And I mean, it's not immediate.
I think we should go get a job as sheriffs. Those guys, God, they're going to be hiring all over the place.
Well, you'd think, yeah.
So, is this going to be a bounce back next month or what? Is this the Maddie said he's never seen these guys missed by 750,000 people before.
I don't know, but I'll tell you, this is the kind of dislocation in that is going to show up in the economy and the follow on effects, if it's real, and this isn't the BLS playing games, is going to be really nasty.
Well, we got a dash here, but I kind of smelled a rat when I saw the 500,000 people unemployment claims. How would you get 500,000 employment claims and 1 million people hired?
Right, that doesn't make sense.
All right, Carl, thank you very much, buddy. Talk at you next week. S&P futures up 13, NASDAQ up 174. Be back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.